This is a standing committee meeting on community safety. We have got some apologies for today. Member Christians, I understand, and also Member Diana, I understand, are given their apologies, and Member Cavito and Member Dylan Mitchell is, sorry, even Member Joseph is standing in on behalf of Member Cavito. So if I could just introduce the member, if the members could just introduce themselves for the purpose of the meeting.
Goedemorgen, goedemorgen allemaal. I'm Dennis Joseph.
Goedemorgen, Dylan Mitchell.
Thank you very much, and my name is Mark Whitey, and I'm the acting chairperson in the stead of Murray Benga, who's given birth to a young bouncing boy, so that's a happy event in itself. Okay, just as far as the agenda is concerned, colleagues, if we could please just confirm the agenda. We're going to get a briefing by the chairperson of the Liquor Authority on their quarterly performance. Then we're going to do some administration work, which is on two reports in some minutes. I'd like to add, please, also another report that has been received by the committee in the stead that we could just add on to that, and that's a Public Service Commissioner's report. And we received also one letter of correspondence that we just need to take a decision on. So that we'll deal with post the presentation. Are there any other matters on the agenda that you need? All right. If not, then if we're in agreement, then it gives me pleasure to welcome Dr. Ndunyelwa, and from the Liquor Authority and some of his officials. I understand Mr. Morris, was he going to be here? Is he here? Not here today. I see you speaking on, you're here on behalf of the department. Thank you very much. I think if we could just do those introductions so that we all know who's who, and then Dr. I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I just want to make a small correction. I'm the CEO of the Liquor Authority, not the Chairperson of the Liquor Authority. Those are two different positions. With your indulgence, Chair, I'm just going to introduce myself and ask the members of the management team to introduce themselves. As I indicated, I'm Luzuko Ndunyelwa. I'm the CEO of the Liquor Authority.
Morning, committee members. I'm Victoria
Letsolo.
I'm the chief financial officer.
Good morning. I'm Philip Brunso. I'm responsible for communication, education, and stakeholder relations.
Good morning. Juan Dreyer, Secretary of Legal Licensing Tribunal.
Good morning. Marcel van Loo. I'm Deputy Director of Compliance and Enforcement.
Good morning. Letitia Peterson. I'm responsible for legal licensing and administration.
Good morning, Yashina Pillay, the Acting Chief Director, Management Support, and I would like to tender a formal apology for Mr. Morris, the Head of Department of Community Safety.
Who is the Official Deputy Director, Management Support, Docs?
Be here and some media as well. All right. So let's ask the Liquor Authority to do their presentation. Doctor, over to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. We circulated copies of the presentation to members of the committee so that at least they can have sight of what we were going to present at the Liquor Authority. And in fact, because the invitation was purely just to do an overview of the 2017-2018 QPRs, what we then did was to extract what is in our 2017-18 APP, and that's what we're going to discuss. And also, as part of the presentation, we're going to briefly mention to the committee what we have in our APP for 18-19. And as part of the overview, Chair, we thought let's start with the purpose and the vision and the mission of the Liquor Authority so as to contextualize this discussion, because in most instances, there is always a misconception around what the Liquor Authority has to do versus, or what the Liquor Authority is expected to do versus what legally the Liquor Authority has to do. The purpose is to provide licensing for the retail sale and the micro manufacture of liquor in the Western Cape province, and to provide for incidental matters. Then subsequent to that, the board came up with a vision that we must regulate liquor effectively in the Western Cape. And then the mission was to create an enabling environment for the optimal regulation of the liquor industry in the Western Cape and to maintain sustainable partnerships with all relevant stakeholders to assist in the reduction of the alcohol-related harms. What we then thought as part of the overview, because most of the targets were reached, let's just highlight those targets that we did not reach and explain why we did not reach those targets. The first of the targets that was not reached was a target in regard to the number of applications received by the Liquor Licensing Administration, which is the department that deals with the processing of the applications. And one of the reasons, which is a simple reason, is that this particular indicator is demand-driven in the sense that it depends on the number of applications you receive. But because the APP must be completed, you then put a number and explain it in terms of the variances when you've achieved, overachieved, or underachieved. So that's the reason. The second one is the Liquor Licensing Tribunal, where there was an underachievement. And because if less applications are received in terms of event licenses and your temp licenses, then you will not achieve your objective. This for us is an indicator of the economy of the province, in the sense that when the economy is booming, your events also increase in number and therefore you overachieve. But if the economy is slack, then you get less events and less license applications and therefore you underachieve. So those were the two particular areas in which we were actually concerned, but we know year in, year out that if the economy of the province is not well performing, then the number of applications that you receive and the licenses that you issue, definitely it reduces by a significant percentage depending on the level of reduction in the economy. But besides that, then we then decided to break down in terms of that slide, which is page 3 online, a breakdown of the typical licenses that we underachieved, which is the Section 36 liquor license application. And I will ask my colleagues to, if there's any detail that is requested, to give the detail as to what each application entails, because there are different types of applications. There's a Section 36 application, which is your normal license application, and as I indicated, you get your event license, you'll get your temp license, you get your license for what we call a manager certificate, and so on and so forth. And then the number of licenses, secondary license applications that were considered in that particular year were 2,200, or the target was 2,200, but the number that was achieved was 3,076, which was an overachievement by about 876. The top one is the one I indicated first, which was an underachievement. We underachieved by about 181. And then below that, you'll get the number of event liquor license applications considered, which was minus 170, underachieved by 170, and your temporary licenses were underachieved by 114. Chair, I think in the interest of time, I just want to highlight those that were underachieved and the reasoning behind that, unless the committee wants to ask a question before we get to our 2018-2019. I don't know whether that's the right approach of dealing with this, because the rest of the indicators are not necessarily problematic, and we're comfortable with them in terms of achieving the required targets.
Okay, committee, can we go with the suggestion of the doctor that he highlights the underachievement areas, and we take it from there?
Question on that overachievement. Can I ask a question?
Which one is that?
The number of secondary liquor license applications considered. I just would like to know, overachievement sounds good, but how do you achieve it, with administration, staff, or budget, or does it work?
Could I ask that those sort of questions relating to capacity that we deal with them at the end, because they might come out now in the explanation of the underachievement. We can do that. We just hold it. So let's thank you very much.
I thought there was another hand. Because of our participation, you know, our sort of lack of a better word, call it intimate participation in the harm reduction, there has been a shift in our focus, in the sense that we incorporated the harm reduction program as part of the areas to be performed by the organization. And how were we going to be involved? We were going to be involved by looking at the entrance of responsible unlicensed liquor outlets into the regulated space, i.e. you're looking at areas that are currently operating illegally but who meet all the requirements in terms of being licensed, and then we assist with the assistance of the DSU, the Office of the Premier, we assist those applicants to get licensed so that they become licensed. That's one of the areas we were focusing on. And the second area in terms of our IPP is the enforcement of the upstream prosecution. That is to look at people like, you know, for example, your macro, you know, the people who are actually providing, who are distributing alcohol. Because what we've realized with our inspections is that most of these now registered outlets are distributing alcohol via a smaller outlet into your illegals. So if we deal with them by means of upstream prosecution, you stop it where you stop the tap from flowing by increasing your inspection at your licensed outlets, your distributor licensed outlets, so that then you can control the amount of alcohol that goes down into your illegals. The third one was to focus on educating and communicating the harm reduction program and the alcohol abuse and alcohol harm. And then with the liquor license administration, we took steps to deal with the unlicensed liquor license outlets, and we're trying to bring those into regulated spaces in a sustainable and responsible manner. The rationale being to provide a scenario where once legalized, they will have to comply with relevant liquor legislation as well as license conditions imposed by the tribunal. In support of this approach, as I indicated, we're working very closely with the Department of the Premier. As a consequence, we have now slightly amended some of the indicators. For instance, if you look at the liquor licensing administration, instead of just measuring the amount of applications processed, we're now trying to look at the applications processed within a specific period, i.e., for instance, there, the percentage of Section 36 applications which are processed within 130 days. And in particular, we want to check to what extent are all the other stakeholders that are involved in the training are either fast-tracking or delaying the process. Because in every application, there are other stakeholders that are involved, such as SEPs and the municipality. And in most cases, the delays are as a result of the municipality not providing a zoning certificate on time, or a DLO report not dealing with the request to go into an inspection on time. So we want to measure that so that in the end we then want to assist those areas in particular where there's a lot of illegality that is taking place. Because if an outlet is illegal, then it's out of our sphere of control. But whereas if we bring it into the fold, as proposed by the harm reduction program, then we can monitor compliance with their conditions, and we can ensure that legal products are being sold in a manner that is determined by the law. And because this is a new indicator, in consultation with the department, we then resolved that instead of looking at the numbers, let's either look at the percentage or let's provide a report, and that report will give us some kind of a benchmark as to what the numbers will be going forward. So this APP has changed slightly as a result of our participation in the harm reduction, and going forward it may change again from reports to numbers, because then we will have established how many of these, say, Section 36 applications came in that year, including those harm reduction areas, or identified area, and then we put that as a number to achieve going forward. Then with regard to the tribunal, the tribunal has been made aware of the harm reduction program, and it subscribes fully to the implementation of the program, in the sense that it's pointless to have the administration aligning itself to the harm reduction program and not having the tribunal aligning itself, because that's the body that adjudicates on application. So it's important that the two are talking to each other. And similarly, they are also now beginning to address the issue of harm reduction in the issuing of licenses. And this is coupled, as we indicated, it is coupled with increased enforcement, which is what Section 20 is dealing with. Because now, with this approach, if one of the licenses is the license holders is not compliant, we write a report to the LLT, and we then request the LLT to deal with the application to the applicant, and the applicant must be dealt with seriously. And we will explain as we go along that there's another new process which we introduced, which is the Section 76E process, a settlement process in which if a person admits to the allegation, then we write a report to the LLT indicating that this person admits guilt, and therefore this person must be fined. So that is also what we introduced in line with the harm reduction program. So if we look at the numbers and the indicators of the tribunal, we'll also see that at the end, we're looking at the report, we're looking at percentages. So what I'm trying to explain to the committee through your chair is that in the 1819 APP, instead of looking at hard, fast numbers, we're looking at percentages and we're looking at the report so that we can then get a benchmark by which we will then decide going forward what numbers to put in the report. Community education and stakeholder, we're looking at engagement, school engagements, which is one of the things that we're focusing a lot on, engaging schools on alcohol harm and how to deal with harm. We're looking at engaging and training community police forums. In fact, we're already training community police forums to assist us with the drafting of the DLO reports and neighborhood watches. And my team is always on the radio, especially focusing on local radio stations, trying to communicate the harm reduction check. And once again, the indicators are there, and the indicators are addressing the issue of communicating harm and communicating harm to the communities that generally do not get this information. Chair, I'm not sure whether I shouldn't stop at that for now, and if there are any questions in any of those. Okay, compliance and enforcement. I see my CFO is pointing to compliance and for enforcement. Compliance and enforcement forms a significant part of this harm reduction program in the sense that we've upped our game in terms of enforcement. Not that we were not enforcing, but the game has been upped in the sense that we've introduced, as I indicated, the settlement program. We're also now very strict in terms of our Section 20 report. Section 20 report is if there's a transgression, we write a report without any hesitation, we submit it to the LLT with recommendations. If the transgression is serious, like where there's underage drinking, we recommend that the license be revoked. But also, there's also legal implications for that. So it's not at the first instance, somebody sometimes is warned or is fined, and then if the person insists on, you know, transgressing on serious transgressions like selling alcohol to underage children, then a recommendation is made that the license must be revoked. So that's the type of Section 20 reports that we are getting, and most of them include consulting the public and getting as much of the immediate vicinity involved in reporting transgressions that are committed by the particular license holder. So you will see that under that, your indicators are inspections conducted, compliance notices issued, operations conducted, and matters referred to the LLT, and matters report on the number of administrative notices served. This is part of our mandate to issue what we call a compliance notice, to forewarn a person that in our inspection we've identified these transgressions, so we want you to correct them within 7 days, and after 7 days we go back to check. If the person has not complied, we then submit a report to the LLT. Then we move to finance. Finance, we're reprioritizing our limited funds to ensure that the initiatives are funded. The cabinet has indicated that we need to move to self-sufficiency. As a consequence, we have now completed an investigation into future funding proposals. That report is going to be discussed with provincial treasury, and in all likelihood, it will be factored into the new amended legislation so that it becomes part of the funding regime going forward. Now, what that report is proposing, among other things, is listing a lot of indicators, one of which is the location of the outlet. You know, that must determine the volume of the outlet is getting. That must determine the fee. You know, and a couple of other indicators which we're planning to put in place. Chair, the indicators under finance are your audited outcomes issued by the AGSA, and I can proudly indicate that in the last 2 years, it seems as if we've turned the tide. The AG is happy with our control measures. We're looking at asset counts. We're looking at the financial statements are submitted, in-year monitoring reports. We're looking at the risk register. We're looking at the quarterly report submitted to DOCS by which we get our tranches. And then the last one, Chair, is your corporate services, which is looking at the support that you're providing to the staff that we have. I think that said, Chair, I'm going to then stop and then field questions if there are any questions, Chair. Thank you very much.
All right, members, that a little bit more than I expected. Let's ask some questions. So, Member Lecker, Member Mitchell, Member Joseph, Member Lecker.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I wish to get an understanding. If we're having an enabling environment that will be able to ensure that were able to regulate the unlicensed liquor outlets. I want to check, one, on issues of rezoning, because many a times that has been cited as the reason why some of the applications were not successful. Now, can you be able to tell me that by now the city has been engaged on this issue, because that was an indication in our last conversation that we had. The second part, Chair, is amongst other things, if you're dealing with the aspect of what did you call this thing? The upstreaming. Yeah, that one. You know, big companies have a tendency of knowing that they've got money and they can bully everyone. Have you, by any chance, encountered any problems with your big companies? And has it been done yet? Have you have any experiences or recent examples where it has been taken to task? If so, have you ever experienced any problems such as being bullied by those companies? The last one, Chair, would be in terms of other areas which are not part of the alcohol harms reduction, is the process the same if you're looking at your areas in Elsworth River? Bokmakiri, is that the same in those areas, the same approach?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to go to the education and stakeholders section. So I first want to go to the 2017-2018 one. And just for interest's sake, the number of updates on the website. So being young and technological and like, because that's what we people get information, the amount of updates that was done is significant, it's like twice or thrice the actual target. So what kind of updates were necessary for it to be? Because I mean, when a website changes, you change the interactive space for with the person, and could affect user friendliness and. But check also on that same slide the number of circulars circulated. So that was also four times more. What kind of need was there for the circular to be quadrupled? And then onto the finance slide, Chair, the actual output for the number of demand management reports submitted to provincial treasury. So there was 13 as a target and only 5 was done. So demand management report, according to my understanding, is a set report that needs to go. So how is it that possible from 13 to 5? That's on that slide. And then, Chair, I want to link back to the new targets for 2018-2019. So on all these achievements, or where it was like quadrupled or tripled, but then you revert back to your initial 2017-2018 targets. So I just want to understand how, because you overachieved significantly in certain areas, and then you go back to the previous year's targets. Just for
Thank you, Chairperson. I've asked the first question on that overachievement. I think there's overachievements in other areas. So my question was just that how does the department sort of go about achieving that with administration staff or budgets? You know, what's the impact on the staff or budget or administration? How is it actually possible? Then the number of awareness interventions from 85 to 275. Unfortunately, the pages is not numbered in my words. I can't refer to it. But the awareness interventions that increased. There's a slide where it refers to the policy shift. You know, there's a shift in policy decisions. And then there's a line, three items down, it says there's a focused approach on educating, communicating the harms of alcohol abuse. My question there is, and then I think there is an answer further down where under community and education there's a community engagement, school engagement. I want to know if that is the answer to what you are doing. My question is actually what more and what is new that the department is going to do to increase the awareness interventions. That's basically the question. And then I wanted to know if the department, if we want to educate people, communities in the arms of alcohol, although you said community engagement, school engagements, police forums, radio interviews. What is your link to the clinics, you know, the health department, because the pregnant mothers, you know, the family areas where the conflict is, where the interaction is, where the damage is caused, you know, due to alcohol and the further impact of that fights and that ends up in a hospital and so on. So I just wanted to know what is your view on that in terms of extending your awareness to other areas or in interaction with other departments if you have such problems. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, with your permission, I'm going to ask my colleagues to chip in where I haven't addressed the question clearly. And I think I'm going to ask Mr. Prinsloo to speak on the direct question around the website updates and the intervention media used to communicate whether they've linked with the health. I want to talk about first the rezoning. The process has moved a significant step forward. I have been involved with Mr. Dre and Mr. Crislow in engagements with the Drakenstein municipality, for instance, because one of the sites is the Pal East site. And as a result of that engagement, a team has been established which is now looking at applications which are received in the alcohol harms identified area. And that team is made up of different specialists, i.e. your planners, your finance, whoever is involved, and its application is considered accordingly. We also have had a meeting with Cape Town, City of Cape Town, and the report that we've received lately from the Office of the Premier is that there are four applications that are ready, which will be some kind of a test case of this approach, and those applications will then be considered in line with this game changer approach. And as I always say, if the menu is right, then it means we've got the solution to the problem. However, the city is adamant that they need to apply for what is the thing? A departure. And they will assist the applicant with the departures. So we there is that engagement, Chairperson, and we want to see the product of the engagement. We're waiting for those four applications and we will consider them, and if they meet the criteria in terms of the act, then there's no reason why those applications should not be approved. Because apparently the places are already, they've got the look and feel of a licensed place. The only thing that is missing is the license. So the city is willing to assist. Regarding upstream prosecution, at the time I was involved, Chair, I'm going to ask Advocate Van Liel to chip in there. At the time I was involved, there was some kind of, not bullying per se from distributors, but there was a sense that you are now stretching your mandate as the liquor authority, which was one of the reasons we actually requested National to accredit our inspectors with the national functions, so that we can be able to access these distributors. In as much as we've got that accreditation, the challenge is now, I mean, these things are always technical, the challenge is now that we've got the mandate to perform these functions, then what? If you find somebody transgressing, do you report that person to National? Because we do not have any power to actually then deal with those people. However, these problems are being sorted out, because in our meeting of the National Liquor Forum, which all the liquor authorities are meeting with SEPs and other stakeholders, we've identified a few big names in the Western Cape. And they want to use the Western Cape as a test case to implement this joint approach, and I'm sure once the joint approach has been implemented, there will be results. Otherwise, currently they know that our mandate is limited, and therefore they give you only what is within their prerogative to give. And if you want more, then they tell you, or you get a letter from a lawyer telling you that you are extending your mandate. Regarding staff, I'm jumping now, Chair, but regarding staff, what we have introduced, which is helping to an extent, is that we are busy with an automation project. And the result of that automation is that it has improved our systems a lot. So whilst we can increase the numbers, the need for staff is not as serious as before. The need is there, but it's not as pronounced as before, in the sense that what was done manually about 10, 12 months ago is now capture information in the system, and the system is driving the application itself. So we're dealing with that in the instance that we do not get any extra funding for positions. With your permission, I'm going to ask Mr. Prinsloo to deal with the question of education.
Thank you, members. With regards to the website, you'll see that we've increased it from the 12 to the 24. The reason for the 12 was because when we planned, we only had one update that was on a certain date for the website that came through. Because of the changes in legislation, that was the easiest way to get the message out there. When we had to, there was price increases for the renewals, the application process changed considerably, the special attempts, the date that you can apply now was previously 13 days or 12 days before the event. Now it is 29 days before the event. So all of this information was critical, and we used the website then to communicate that. Correctly stated, as you go along, you learn, you tailor make your website to your specific target audience. And one of the things, for example, we recognize now already, we've made it 24 because we planned it. We had two updates planned that we definitely will update it. Last week I was called in, for example, by corporate service, which means there's now three things that we're going to put on a monthly basis, which already increased it. So in our next APP, we already know our target should be a minimum of 36, because as you engage with stakeholders, they inform you, you know what, we'd like to have a monthly update on A, B, and C, and the easiest way to go, if correctly stated, is to go through the website. So there is a learning curve as we go along also. One of the things, for example, that we decided to do is also, and that will be in the next month, is a workshop on our website to further try and tailor make it to our specific target audience. With regards to the number of circulars, once again, we had a certain date where we send out circulars where we communicate to our stakeholders all the information for the month for the legal authority. We have increased that. We didn't increase it in the second, but I think with the new APP we're going to increase that also, because one of the things, for example, that we're going to start communicating to our stakeholders also is the number of licenses that we have on a monthly basis, because we get a lot of inquiries to that, and the stakeholders differ. So there's going to be a circle that's going to continue also. So once again, in our new AVPs, that will also increase. And like I indicated, the more you get a demand from your circle, from your stakeholders, the more you'll probably tailor-make your AVP for that. With regards to the engagement number of interventions conducted, we've increased that also in the new APP. However, the specific increase was we had a drive, a roadshow drive, with the regulation changes and the act changes and the implementation across the province, so that we and that was one of the measures to get the message out about the increase in the renewal fees that took place and so on. So that was the increase in that. Then also the partnership that we had with the Department of Community and Safety, we probably did 30 or 40 extra sessions where we targeted, that wasn't planned for, that we targeted police community forums to use them as an extension in the community, and neighborhood watches to use them as an extension in the community, because we only have currently two education officers. With regards to the partnering with the Department of Health, we partner with different organizations, social development, local municipalities, which have the LDACs committees, but with health we didn't partner yet, because like I indicated, we have two education officers, and normally what we do is we find it very helpful to partner with municipalities, because they know on the ground what's happening in the municipality, and they are also the people that stay behind. With the Department of Education, for example, we'll partner with the social workers that work in that schools, and they're also the people that stay behind. Maybe that's some of the things that we can explore to see how we can work with the Department of Health going forward.
I wanted the CFO to deal with the question of finance.
Thanks, Chair. True. When we set the APP for the last financial year, remember the demand management plan we report in terms of national treasury requirements. So in the year before, we used to report monthly. But then after the APP was finalized, but before the financial year started, they reduced the requirement from monthly to quarterly. That's why they need dropped out to 5. Thank you.
Lastly, there was a question which I've just realized now going down my list around the Elsis River and other areas of Makia. Chair, with the assistance of the Department of Community Safety, we got three inspectors which we appointed on a fixed-term contract. And those three inspectors were for the harms reduction program. So we then allocated those three to our harms reduction areas so that we freed the nine to do the rest. So we're still doing, performing our function of inspection. Nothing has changed. The only thing that has changed is that we are now putting more emphasis and effort on these game changer areas because there was an extra resource which was provided by the department. It's not as if we've left everything and focused on game changer areas. No. We're doing game changer areas on top of what we have been doing before. So the long and the short is that we are focusing on all the other areas, including the game changer areas. Thank you, Chair.
The follow-up with that.
Okay, to follow up, and then I've got some questions, and then we'll go to another round.
Thank you, Chair. In the spirit of bringing outlets into a regulated space, Chair, I wish to get perhaps numbers. One, in respect of Drakenstein, and Town 2. So far, how many outlets have we managed to license as a tribunal? I mean, as a legal authority.
Okay. Then before we answer, if I could just ask some questions too, please. And then we'll go on to another round for the members. I'd just like to know, what role does the Poker Act, the Proceeds of Organized Crime Act, fulfill in this regard? Because as part of the schedule of definitions of this act, the Western Cape Liquor Act, it does talk about the confiscation of, and in the long title as well, talks about the confiscation of items after you've done enforcement. I want to know, has the Poker Act been applied in any regard, or does it not apply here? And Advocate Pillay might be able to assist there. And secondly, in the event that you have appropriated any people have forfeited fridges and various other things to the state, has this in fact happened, and have you had any sales in this regard? That's the one aspect. Then I'd like to know, one of your mandates under finance has been from the cabinet has indicated that they want you to move to a base of being self-sufficient. So I'd like to ask from your CFO, have you in fact developed a business plan of exit from state support? And if so, how close are you to your targets being met to become a self-sustained entity? Then as far as targets are concerned, I've been around a while, as you might guess. I get really nervous when everything is done in round numbers. So when your target is 3,000 and you've done 700 and your target is 50 and you've done 10, then it raises a red flag for me. I mean, it can't be surely that everything is done to simple round numbers. So I would ask of you if there's any particular reason why you aim at fulfilling just the required amount, because if you look under the compliance and enforcement, and there I must ask the question with regard to your capacity, because report the number of compliance notices, inspections is one aspect, report on the number of compliance notices issued. Now, in an industry which is really suspect in many respects as far as a lot of illegality that is taking place, is that compliance notices, are they issued to exist a licensed premises or to illegal people who are being reported, in other words, that they're non-compliant? So I'd just like clarity on that, because if you've only done, if your target was 4 and you've only done 1, then it's a very, very low target. The number of enforcement operations conducted, 50 was your target and 10 completed. So again, I must get some indication as to capacity. And that brings me then to a question relating to capacity. In the Act, it talks about you have the ability to appoint peace officers. Have you appointed any peace officers to assist you in this regard? And I'm not talking about cyber and police service or municipal peace officers. I'm talking about people in the broader definition of peace officers, in other words, upstanding members of society who are prepared to assist you and that sort of stuff. Have there been any appointments in that regard? And can I just ask, what is your cooperation with SAPS with regard to your general work?
Okay. If we could answer those questions, then we'll go for another round of questions from the members.
On the number of licenses issued or considered in those three areas, ma'am, the project is it's a two-leg project. The first part of that project is where you meet with the municipalities and try and convince them to take away the zoning barrier. So we, like the CEO has explained this morning, we had meetings with Drakenstein and we had meetings with the city of Cape Town with regard to zoning. They indicated that they are willing to not rezone the area, those premises, but they will look at departures. They've indicated notes where they can apply, etc. So the illegal traders or the unlicensed traders who is part of this project is going to come eventually before they end up with us, where we can consider the application. There's a lengthy process that they have to go through with the municipality. So in other words, they must first apply with the municipality for that departure for zoning. Once that part of the this project has been completed, those applications will then come to us, to the licensing tribunal, and we will then consider those applications in terms of the act. So all three of these areas are still in the process where they're busy with their departures with the city of Cape Town and with in Drakenstein. So once that's finalized, it will come to us. We looked at the stats. We currently have three applications that was considered by a tribunal, but that was in the Kunya area, Kubuleto and Nyanga area. They're not part of this process because they correctly zoned, but we still indicate them. They've been considered by the tribunal. Then no final decision has been made there yet because further information was requested. But what we do know is that in town 2, Khayelitsha area, four outlets has been identified. It looks like the city of Cape Town is going to give them that departure for it. So, and they indicated to us that we should expect those applications by end July. So it should be submitted by end of next week.
I'm going to ask Advocate Van Lille to deal with the FOCA Act and the question of compliance notices.
Thank you, Chair. The problem with the FOCA is that it obviously deals with the criminal matters. We only take the license premises, the license outlets contraventions to the LLT. We have had cases which the police investigated in terms of the unlicensed premises, which we obviously cannot deal with, and those matters are being investigated by SAPS. The problem with the FOCA is that the asset forfeiture guys has got a certain mandate, which I think starts at about 20,000 rand. So they also look at the value of the items that are to be seized. If we took a look at fridges and liquor and so on, we have a difficulty in getting the liquor forfeited normally, because you have to get proper evidence to have the matter basically early in court. With the unlicensed outlets, the problem is that the police normally issue fines, and as soon as the fine is paid, the liquor is returned to the person from whom it was seized, because the act doesn't allow differently. Therefore, there was a recent request that all these matters must be properly investigated and then ensure that the matter appear before a magistrate in order to have a forfeiture of the liquor considered. But that's a challenge in itself, I guess.
Can I suggest that rather than to appropriate fridges, which are a couple of thousand rand, you appropriate the delivery trucks, which are valued at anything between a couple of hundred thousand and a couple of million. That'll stop it fairly soon. The delivery trucks because the Proceeds of Organized Crime Act, as you know, is that any person associated with regard to the train of that criminality is liable. So, and that includes the delivery truck.
I think the challenge we have is I'm again referring to the criminal cases. We have to register criminal cases in order to get the asset forfeiture guys involved. With our processes, we get, I would say, more severe sentences imposed from the LLT than I think would happen in the criminal courts. We're struggling to get the national prosecuting authority on board. we've been in discussions with them regarding liquor-related offences. They've looked at a few cases, but for us, it seems to be more efficient and effective to prosecute these license outlets before the LLT. But we do not have any forfeiture and powers in that regard. But we can consider the problem again with the bigger outlets. We talk about the distributors who are registered nationally only. Those matters must be referred to criminal courts again. And I don't think the national prosecuting the national liquor authority has the capacity to actually deal with that. So we haven't seen many successes in that regard. If we look at the bigger outlets, we talk about big companies in South Africa, we haven't seen many successes. But we are willing to get involved. The fact is that our licensed outlets in the Western Cape takes up so much time in terms of investigation that we merely focus on them. And I must say we've been so successful the past financial year in terms of fines issued that it's really making an impact.
Thank you, Chair. The Department of Community Safety is the lead department in relation to the alcohol harms reduction game changer. And if the members, through you, Chair, would like us to make a presentation on the progress made thus far in terms of the game changer, we would gladly do so. We are also engaging, just specifically on this matter, we are engaging with the Department of Justice as well as the National Prosecuting Authority to look at some of these upstream prosecutions as well as the forfeiture and confiscation of the liquor. And we are engaging with them to get an alternative or different state attorney's legal opinion that would support that confiscation and forfeiture of that. So we would gladly come and do a presentation, and that would also indicate our linkages with other departments like the Department of Health, social development, etc., and how we are all working together to reduce the harms of alcohol in the province. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Advocate, how about the 15th of August? All right, let's move on to the rest of those questions, please. CFO.
Thank you, Chair. The question on the business plan to exit from the state. What we've done in the past financial year is the fees were increased for the first time since the new act was in place. From those fees that we raised, I think we became closer to being self-sustaining. The biggest challenge for us is that the funding model is prescribed in terms of the Act. So the bulk of what we collect goes back to the revenue fund, and then we get a grant. So in the last financial year, those were more or less matched. So if for us to be then exiting from the state, the funding model needs to change, which is one of the proposals that we're putting through in the act that's being amended now. We've done a research, as the doctor has said, on proposing a fee structure that is more cost recovery, because at the moment we subsidize the applicants. For instance, for a normal license, there's others that need to be done. There's a lot of processes which the authority is paying for, because they're only paying an application fee of 1,600, and it might cost, depending on the area, because of the access to the media, which costs upwards of 10,000 per applicant. So it's not fair to say you want to be in this business, it only costs you 1,600 to apply, and then once it's approved, you pay 1,300 to get a certificate, while on our side, for us to process that and actually to, you know, even monitor your compliance costs a lot more. So the proposal that we are putting now is to have a more cost recovery basis. So the research was completed last financial year. So the next phase now is to make recommendations with in consultation with Treasury, the department, and the game changer role players.
Okay, one last question you raised around the question of SAPs. From where I'm sitting, and the peace officers, I think all our inspectors have been appointed as peace officers. Yes. So we've got that covered. But in regard to our relationship with SAPS, from where I'm sitting, Chair, the relationship we have as the legal authority with SAPS is very, very good. We're getting as much support as possible from them. Advocate Van Lille is having constant weekly meetings with their provincial office and is involved in training the DLOs, because one of the problems that we had was compiling a DLO report that would be of such a substance that the LLT can use for its applications. And Advocate Van Lille has been involved in training those DLOs to prepare those reports. So from our side, the relationship with the South African Police Services is very good and very positive. And it's gaining strength from month to month. There are problems because you're dealing with people, but on the whole, it's a very good relationship.
Okay, I just want to confirm your DLO is the designated liquor officer, which is South African Police Service person, normally a warrant officer based at the station, is that correct? Okay. Next round of questions? Any other questions? No other questions. Can I just ask Advocate Pillay, there have been a number of things that have come out of this that I see are possibly bending towards either amendment of this Act or alternatively a better arrangement with the national authority, because if these good people here are dependent on success to some cooperation by the national authority, then we're going to have problems. They're going to have problems. Can I just ask one last question, because when last I was on this committee, the Liquor Authority was just in a sort of formative stages, and the Liquor Tribunal especially had a lot of capacity problems as far as their database is concerned, and everything was done literally by passing a single file around the table. Have things improved since those days?
Yeah, I think the in the old days, yeah, the old days, Chair's not so long ago, though. But yeah, we are busy. The automation process that the CEO is alerted to includes the tribunal processes, etc. Well, they will be work on laptops. They will be connected to the system. They will the files will be scanned. They will can look at it simultaneously on their laptops. They will then make decisions. They can register the vote. They capture the decisions, the individual decisions or recommendations, etc. So automation wise, yes, we are getting there and getting there fast. The other capacity constraints that existed within the tribunal was the number of members on the tribunal. Remember, the Act made provision for a Section 24 committee to be formed, but there wasn't enough members provided for to form that Section 24 committee. So the Act was changed in 2015. It came into effect in July 2017, where the two additional deputy presiding officer positions was provided for, as well as for substitute members. The governing board has appointed another DPO and started at 1st June, and they're in the process now of shortlisting and interviewing for substitute members. So hopefully by the end of August, around about the end of August, we will be able to start to implement the Section 24 committee, which will take a lot of the applications away from the Liquor License Tribunal, opening up capacity for more enforcement. So yes, all those matters are being addressed at this stage.
And you've got enough office space, and that also was a problem at one stage?
No, they've got more than they need now.
Transport costs and things of that nature all covered?
All of that sort.
All sort of, fantastic. And there has been a significant improvement since the battle test, which was just last couple of years ago.
They even have laptops now,
Okay. All right, if there are no further questions from the committee, All right, Doctor, can I thank you and your team, and thank you very much for the progress. It's obviously there's significant improvement from when I last was here, so if you just needed a bit of a temperature feeling from someone who had been around previously, then there's been a significant improvement. Well done, thank you very much. Just try and make sure that your figures that you come and bring us next time have a couple of ones and twos and threes and fours in it, and not just fives and zeros. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah. Well,
Wasim Matthews, our coordinator, said that there are some refreshments out there, so please enjoy a cup of tea and a scone or something. Just carry on, please, with our admin-related matters. So I'm going to refer you first. Two reports. The one is the oversight report on the safety kiosks. It's a very short report. There was apparently three visits to some safety kiosks, unannounced visits. I personally wasn't there, but the two of you were there. Okay, but we have got a member that was there. Mr. Mitchell, were you there? You were there? Okay, is that sufficient people to... You were also there? And the member... Member Wenger, has she seen this report? And she signed off on it? She has signed off on it. All right, so in absentia then the chairperson has done it, so that... Are we in agreement that we can adopt this report? the chairperson still busy, though. Thank you very much. Then the second report is about the shot spotter. Okay, that's a little bit longer and a little bit more involved. And we've got two members that were on that delegation there, members Lecker and Mitchell. Do either of you have a... any comments you want to make?
No, I don't have a comment. I move for the adoption.
Remove the adoption. Yeah. Thank you very much. Member Mitchell, in concurrence, thank you very much. That's done. Are there any matters arising out of those two reports that for follow-ups is concerned? Anybody? Any follow-ups you want to do? Okay, I think we must just make...
To the members here, I mean, the one to the safety kiosk.
Yeah.
I think that was an unannounced visit. Just a question, if it was an announced visit, would there have been different observations? Or
well, I understand that two of the three were unattended. So can I suggest that as part of our resolutions is that we ask the department to give us a report with regards to how these, what are the hours of occupation of these kiosks, and how do they monitor the occupation of those kiosks. Okay. Then can I refer you to the minutes? Draft minutes of 6th of June, which you should have a copy. Page 1. Now, for those of you who have just seen it for the first time. Page 2. Page 3, just looking for corrections now, and page 4, and then there was the attendance register page, with the guests, alright, so it's in guests register. Alright, if there are no amendments to the minutes, can I have a proposal to adopt the minutes, and then we can talk about matters arising. Okay, adopt, thank you very much. Are there any matters arising out of these minutes?